Welcome to G's Podcast. I'm Emily Harmon.
And I'm Gwen Douglas.
And today we're talking about Gamay. So we chose Gamay because it's still autumn time and we felt that it would be a good... I think it's quite a nice autumnal red.
I think it absolutely is.
Yeah. And definitely one of my favourite varietals. We both bought our own Gamay. And I think it'd be good if we talk a little bit about where we find Gamay, what it's like.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you eat it with?
Exactly. What do you drink it with when you're
right.
eating?
Yeah, exactly.
So, what do you know about Gamay, Gwen?
I know that Gamay is from Beaujolais.
Yes.
So, a little bit south of Beaujolais.
Yeah.
And that it's often vinified using whole grape clusters.
Yes.
That would be carbonic maceration, which gives it sometimes a bubblegummy or banana candy kind of taste. And that's probably it.
Yeah. So,
and that I think it's delicious.
Should we start? Let's start with opening one. I think.
Yep.
And then let's start answer all these questions
all
as
right,
we go.
All right, yeah.
So I think you should open yours, and I've purposely bought my own bottle opener today.
I know, I actually brought another
because
one.
Because Gwen has the most bizarre bottle opener that exists on the planet of the Earth.
So I
or
did...
the planet of the Earth. The planet Earth.
So I did,
our planet Earth.
I did actually bring another opener because this opener is the one that I keep here at the studio at Tyco. And a client gave me this, and it's hilarious because it's like a novelty... wine bottle opener.
So plastic.
It's very plastic. So, I mean, this is really the opener that we have to open in a pinch. So I might use the knife on yours to cut through my capsule.
Oh, your wonderful bottle opener.
I actually did bring a better opener that will live here from now on. So we're good.
Yeah, we should get it in its full glory.
Oh my God, it's
actually
ridiculous.
Says, Beauté du Esprit Rouge, the bottle of red spirit, 2012.
I know, I did think of that this
morning. 11% alcohol. That does not look like an 11% alcohol bottle of wine either, which is very funny.
It definitely looks like something you get on... I never actually read that bottle, but it looks like just a classic when you see bottles lined up at a restaurant.
Oh, what the hell, going full in?
As I'm not using that plastic thing, I'm going to make a mess of things.
I don't know, but there we go. We'll see how long it stays standing up. You might knock over the little Vina Lupa one. I thought we'd start with this because I believe it to be lighter. Can I? Sorry, I just poured
Go for it.
So we're starting with Gwen's wine, Morgon Jean Boyard. It's the Morgon Classique 2017.
I did actually have the 2015, but I forgot it at home, so I had to go get another one.
Unreliable.
Cheers.
Cheers.
That smells delicious.
Tastes delicious.
Maybe we should
open the other one first. We'll see. We'll play around with them. I might open
mine. It's almost like caramel. It's like a caramelly raspberry.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah. But not an unpleasant caramel. Like, it's not... It just makes me want to get right in there.
Get right in. So Gamay is the name of the grape variety. Not a lot of people would necessarily be familiar with the grape variety Gamay, because actually the wines that are produced from this varietal rarely have
Gamay
written on the label. We often have different Beaujolais and Cru Beaujolais, so different areas within Beaujolais that are usually written on the label, which is actually what we have today. So Bruy and Morgon are both little subzones in the Beaujolais region. But Gamay, predominantly known for producing the wine from Beaujolais. So whenever you see Beaujolais on a wine list,
that's
in a wine shop, and it's a red wine, it's usually almost 100%.
That's true. I guess you don't really... Is there anywhere in the world that's making Gamay?
Yes.
There is. Tell me about it.
Well, we also see Gamay... obviously, Gamay spreads a little bit. So we do see it in the south of Burgundy, in Mâcon.
Yes, okay, yeah.
So Mâcon Rouge, certain appellations can have a little bit of Gamay mixed in with the Pinot or be 100% Gamay, which is not a lot of people are that familiar with.
Really?
No,
I didn't know that.
So if you see a red Mâcon, then it could be made with...
A mix or 100%, depending.
With Gamay. And also the Loire. We see it always in the Loire. You see some Pinot Noir, some Gamay around there. And then outside of France, a little bit, not really anywhere else in Europe, but in the New World, so a bit in the US, there's a few people in California producing Gamay. In Australia, down just in Gippsland, there's a very famous producer of of Pinot Noir called Bass Philip, and they make an amazing Gamay that I really like. That Sorenberg in Beechworth, also in Victoria in Australia.
And I'm guessing the sort of New World ones are they bigger? Are they sweeter? Are they produced the same way? Are they doing also carbonic maceration, or do they not need to because the grapes are sweeter or ripened a little longer?
I think the grape variety itself is very different to if you look at, there are similarities between Gamay and Pinot Noir for me because they are grapes that produce wines that have very high acidity, low tannin, this lovely aromatic profile. They age relatively well. That's what a lot of people don't know about Gamay and Beaujolais, that actually you can age the wines for at least 10 years from a good producer. And so similar to Pinot in that way, a little bit similar to Cabernet Franc as well with that profile, but where Cabernet and Pinot can sort of handle a bit of new oak, you don't really see that working so well with
Cabernet. No, because I like Cabernet Franc, I like the little end note, the bitterness that you get on the end of it.
The herbal edge the spiciness.
Which you don't really get from this. This is...
You know, if I had to sum Gamay up in a very short description to somebody that had never tasted it before, I would say light to medium bodied, high acidity, low tannin, this lovely aromatic, almost like brambly character on the nose, and this lovely earthiness at the same time, sometimes a slightly more rustic nature.
This is definitely something I usually recommend to people that say they have like histamine problems. If they're finding other red wines giving them headaches because it's so light, it's light in a lot of that kind of stuff. A nice red entry. Like if you're not a huge red drinker, I think this is a really nice way to go into reds without feeling
100%
it's too complicated.
And the perfect bottle of wine to put on a table. You asked before about the food pairing, so the perfect bottle of wine to put on the table where somebody's eating fish, somebody's eating meat,
exactly,
it's a good sort of go-to choice to make
roast chicken
happy.
Dinner.
Yeah,
cold cuts and charcuterie.
Lovely smoked salmon, like on toast. Like, why not?
It's just like anything kind of goes with this. Which I think it's definitely one of my go tos. I really like it for
my all time favorite pairing. It's a little bit of a cliche, but like casse-croûte, like so like terrine, like just like bread with meat and little cornichons. Like,
but that's also what goes together, right? Because that's pretty much what they're eating in that region. I would say, right?
Yeah, it's always a dream of mine to be in Beaujolais. Picking grapes and stopping off for a bottle like hot in the vineyard, eating a little bit of terrine or something, and then carrying on.
So good. I have to say, this is really delicious. I'm really enjoying it. But it's really like this. It's funny because it's changing.
The raspberry,
raspberry, like
now
crazy.
A little bit more black fruit coming out as well.
And there's also a little
reminds me of being a child and blackberry picking in the UK.
Totally.
I'm just like eating it. Like,
your fingers are all purple and.
Yeah. And your mouth, everything sort of like smeared around.
I did that recently, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, we went to the Forest House north of Berlin.
Forest House Australia,
And Lucas and I spent a good 30 minutes like hovering over that bramble bush, just smashing them in our faces. It was great fun. Just that like warmed by the sun and super sweet.
Your boyfriend.
Yeah. We should have him on for a...
just to watch him eat, see how much fruit one person can eat in 30 minutes.
We do like fruit desserts and wine. Delicious. So I'm curious to see.
I'm just going
to
see what this one tastes like, see if we're doing this in the right order.
Like curious. It's a much deeper color. This one looks, I mean, obviously this one's 17. Which this one? This one?
The 16.
Funny, there's quite a bit of a color difference between these two.
Do you want to taste mine?
Yes, I do.
I think we should do the brewery first, actually.
This definitely has like a...
So this is quite funny that we chose these two bottles, that both of us bought one and the other one bought the other. So what we have here is Morgon Classique from Jean Foyard, as we said before, 17, and then the brewery from Alex Foyard, 2016. So we're actually tasting father and son.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. So one of the sort of... The old guard of Beaujolais, if you like, but in a good way. The old guard of the new movement in Beaujolais that's not so new anymore. And his son, Alex Foyard's first vintage.
Oh, wow.
And I can't Don't quote me on this, but first vintage in his early 20s. So I think, I don't know how much experience he had working for his father, but I know that he was working at Prieur Roc in Neuilly-Saint-Georges, which is a quite a well-known, well-respected, very natural producer of Burgundy or Bourgogne wines.
It's definitely more savoury, this one.
Mm. I think the first thing you notice with the brewery
is a little is cloudy.
It's so much more cloudy because obviously both wines, I think, I believe, are unfined and unfiltered. Okay. But it's definitely more, like, it's funny, like, it almost smells like Pinot, this one,
yes,
to me.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying, because it has that earthy, it has an earthy, like, forest floor thing going on.
For me, it's like sweet beetroot. Again, got all of these raspberry fruits and different things going on, but, yeah, I love the earthiness, I love that.
Yeah, it smells very good. But on the nose, completely different.
And on the palate, so different, the texture's different. Mm-hmm. It's a bit softer.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel like that, even though it's softer, there's sort of more particles to the wine.
Mm-hmm. There's more like more viscosity in your mouth.
Totally.
Also, it's hard to tell whether it's like the, there's a rounderness, like a less high, there's less sharpness to it.
Yeah, it's got a fruitiness. It's a bit softer, but it's nice. I haven't tasted this for about 6 months, but it's tasting really well.
It's good.
Yeah,
they're both really delicious, but I think very different, actually.
Yeah.
Mm. Both like,
Yeah, it's almost, this is almost more plummy.
Yeah, totally. It reminds me not at exactly.
I was
picking
plums
plummy,
the other day.
It makes me think of like the, what's the classic Austrian dish with the
I know the
it's
one.
It's like a dumpling, and then you pull it apart, and there's like a plum jam, and they love that like plum jam in Austria. This is totally, as soon as you said plummy, that's
Svechka.
Yeah, it's totally this.
I was picking, they're called Svechka in Austrian, but I think in French they're called, I don't know if they're Claude Ren or they're almost like a greengage, but they're purple on the outside, so they're sort of greeny-yellow inside, and then they've got
like
the purple skin.
Is it like a damson? Are they like
maybe
more
it's damson,
sour?
Maybe that's it. A little bit sour, but they're very sweet, and I was picking them in Brandenburg on the weekend, and this just reminds me of all the cakes that
I made. Lucas and I, someone asked him the other day, was like, what's your favourite fruit? And he went, I like stone fruit. And someone was like, you get, it's like a whole category of fruit that's
citrus.
But him and I both love stone fruit, and plums as a kid were probably one of my favorite things to pick in the UK. Greengages.
And good stone fruit. Like a good peach.
Yeah.
When you have a good peach versus a bad peach.
Oh my God.
Like an apple, a shit apple and a great apple. Yeah. Okay, the distance isn't so far, but a good peach and a bad peach.
So actually,
that's quite a big distance.
Yeah, totally. And I think like that's something that, because Lucas is such a fruit junkie, that at home when we're trying fruit, we're often comparing things. So he'll do like a white peach, a yellow peach, and we'll have pieces of each one. And you really, because he's so controlled about when we eat it exactly at peak ripeness, that it's actually quite interesting to see the differences. Maybe I should get into it for plums. It's good practice for tasting
when to,
and smelling
your fruit, totally.
But also like differentiating like the ripeness and the slight nuances between fruit.
That's pretty geeky though, isn't it?
It is, but it's so
I kind of love him for that, but it's so
he's
geeky.
Getting me into it too. Like we had a mango the other day and I was like, can't stop thinking about this mango.
Well, your house, every time I see a pineapple, I think of your kitchen table because there's always like
but you've never been
an
here.
Ornamental one that is always there. Like I never see it cut up.
No. And we eat a pineapple about once a week.
It's great.
Yeah, it's fun. But we had a mango the other day that was like custard. The consistency was like custard. Excuse me, like none of that fibrousness that you ever get.
It was in a good way, or
crazy good, like mango pudding out of a mango shell.
Did you just?
Oh yeah, it was like we were both losing our minds over it.
I can imagine.
Days later, it was like, oh my gosh, that mango. He's like, oh yeah.
Well, it's like the Alfonso mango season.
Yeah.
And I bought like something like 30 back from the UK. It was just like, oh my God, the whole house
so good.
Mangoes. It's so nice.
Okay, sidetracked.
We did sidetrack a little bit on fruit. I'm loving this one, actually.
Yeah, I would
nice
smash texture. Both of these. These are delicious. Both of them. Why did you choose to do this one then first, that you said we should drink this one first? I'm curious about why.
The alcohol's slightly lower.
Okay.
It's 12.5%. The other one's 13%. And I think Morgon, the appellation of Morgon anyway, because of the soil makeup, is more structured.
Right.
Which is why a lot of the wines from Morgon age a little bit more, because a little bit more tannin in the wines. And I just think with this brewery and his approach to it, it's just got this lovely softness to it. It reminds me, it's very bizarre, because actually the first time I tried it, it reminded me of like a light version of some of the natural Australian Pinots I drink, because there's this herbal quality that's almost like a mintiness that I see in this wine.
It's like borderline eucalypt. Yeah, right.
But it's just got this lovely sort of softness but freshness at the same time. I don't know how this will age or not. Was that Ludi?
That's the dog, and he's under my chair.
He's asleep under there.
Oh, totally. This is what happens if I go to therapy. He sits under the chair and sleeps.
It's like, you do you, I do me. Yeah.
Keeping my eye on you. But I also think I would eat probably different things with each of these, even though they're both Gamay. I don't know, I'm struggling a little bit. I do think that, like, a little mustard and toast and whatever, but I wouldn't... I think I would keep it a little simpler. I mean, there's not so much acidity in this one. I don't think it would go up against a Cornichon the same way that the other one maybe would. If that makes any sense.
I love that sentence. I don't know how that would go up against a Cornichon.
No, but you know what I mean? Yeah. I feel like the acidity is not that high with this one. If you like, because some Cornichons are like crazy acidic, they kill everything.
Yeah, I mean, I think
some of that awesome Austrian mustard that's like the little slightly sweeter mustard.
Yeah, I think both would work well with the options. This is a bit softer and easier. I think I would sway more to having food and maybe more proteiny, meaty things with the Morgon. That would be my preference. But I think this is quite an impressive wine, considering young winemaker, first vintage. All of the traits of Gamay, this lovely freshness is there from the wines from Beaujolais, because we remember we've got all this granitic soil, so always having lovely freshness.
I think you just don't need any food with this one. It kind of is a bit of a snack.
It kind of is a bit of a snack.
It is a bit of a snack, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, occasions to when you drink it. So we're talking about what would we have it when we're sitting at home, but like, where could you imagine yourself drinking this?
This is great picnic. These are great picnic wines, I think. Because I think, like, they can be
providing
autumn picnic.
Autumn picnic. Yes. Because then the bottle's not too warm.
Exactly. So I was going to say, I think autumn picnic, this is it. Go to Tiergarten, get a nice blanket, get some snacks.
Snuggle with your lover.
Yeah, total autumn picnic. I don't even think you would necessarily, just some crackers and cheese, you'd be, like, happy as a clam.
Yeah.
Chilly beach.
Yeah.
Would be really nice.
Curry versus pairing.
Yeah. Curry versus pairing. Oh, yeah, okay. Ooh. I was like...
I was like, she's hesitating. When does that happen?
No, I was more like, is there some left in the glass?
I'm a professional, Ben.
I don't mind.
So now, let's try about this again. So, Morgon Classic. Mm. So, Foyard producing, I think only four cuvées, actually. So, I know that he produces the Fleury, which is another area in Beaujolais, very famous for having this more sort of feminine floral edge to the wines, quite pretty, on the fresher side, or brighter side, if you like.
Yeah. I always find that the acidity is quite high in
Fleury. And more sort of fruit and floral. Not everybody feels okay with that, but feminine, what do you associate as feminine? I feel like anything I say is not politically correct. I know,
that's actually
pretty
interesting now, because actually that's... I haven't really thought of it. Right.
What is feminine? What is femininity to you? I don't know.
Right.
Yin energy. Lunar energy.
It's alive and floral. And,
yeah, it's really difficult. So,
that aside.
Pretty floral.
Yeah.
And then now we're at Morgon. So he's producing the Fleury. He's producing this Morgon Classique, which is kind of the entry level, if you like. It's about half the price wine, which is called Cote de Pie, which I think worldwide probably one of the most famous wines, one from Beaujolais, two from Gamay in the world. And it's just iconic, the top wine from this little single vineyard that's on a hill. A couple of producers have vines on the Cote de Pie, on a slight hill in Morgon, with a couple of trees on it. But it's So Côte de Paix, top wine, this one, and then he makes another Morgon, which is sort of a step up from the Côte de Paix. So I think the name and the brand of Jean Voyard is kind of very well established, and he's very well respected. So sort of, I think we touched a little bit on before when we talked a bit about the natural wine movement and how that came from Beaujolais. And whilst it's kind of old news, like so many people know the story now, actually, if you're not in the wine trade, you don't know the story. But really starting sort of post-World War II all the way up to the 80s, this sort of slow movement happening with different producers in Beaujolais and in the Loire, kicking off producing wines without using chemicals in the vineyards, not filtering, not fining. Both of these wines are unfined, unfiltered, from at least organic fruit. No use, heavy use of oak, very low use of SO2, if not any at all. And really trying to express the varietal where it's coming from. This really started in this region. Everyone talks about Jules Chauvet as sort of being the starter of that, and then also talking about the Gang of Four, these four iconic producers from Beaujolais. Foyard was one of them.
Okay.
And it's quite interesting because the torch is being passed on. Like, I always think it's the same, for me, it's the same, like, it's the same
branch. It's a continuation sort of thing.
It's a continuation.
Yeah. That's really lovely.
Yeah, and since he sort of came on board, we kind of almost needed, like, another producer in between, because there are so many great producers, David Chappelle, Migaud, like, there's so many great, interesting, dynamic producers in Beaujolais today that have been doing it for quite some time, maybe not as long as Jean, but would sort of fit between these two wines. So it's a very...
Actually, I think the gimmick isn't talked about enough, actually.
Yeah.
Like, because I kind of feel like it's that sort of wine that maybe the snobbier of wine drinkers don't always...
One wine rep that I used to buy wine from said to me, Beaujolais is the last fine wine region to be discovered in France.
Well, that's interesting.
And actually, when you think about that, it's quite true, because actually we went, you know, okay, Burgundy, Bordeaux, or Bourbon, Bordeaux, like, they've been well
it's
received
like
for a long time.
It's like the little sister or something, or like the little brother.
Well, you have to think, like, sort of, at the time of, like, the Green Revolution was happening, what was happening at Beaujolais, I mean, there were winemakers committing suicide because, like, it was such a difficult time to produce wine. The value of the grapes, the value of the wine, the styles of the wine, like, I mean, it was like all the shitty Beaujolais that we buy now in a shop, like, it was just, that was the whole region.
Yeah.
They have an amazing terroir because granitic soil, everybody knows, like, granite's like an amazing soil to work with. Bush vines, like, and the Gamay grape variety, like, it's
just being,
it's a recipe made in heaven, like, it's perfect. So, it's a very interesting region for me, because it's that bridge between Burgundy and the Northern Rhone, because you're seeing styles that are more similar to Burgundy, but with the terroir, like the soil, it's a bit, like
more southern.
Well, with the granite. Yeah. But I think.
I know the dog keeps making.
I know it sounds like you keep farting. I know it's him. And he's like totally oblivious. He's actually slept like this.
He's such a good poser.
I think, it's a very interesting region, but I think it hasn't always been an easy region to produce wine in. And actually the movement, thanks to people, you know, like Jean, like different other growers that were also moving, you know, hopped on the same train, moving on the same path. Thanks to those people to really invest their time and actually create a really high-end product from it, it sort of revived and revitalized this region and put it back on the map for a lot of people to make it more relevant. So now, to the point, if you speak to anybody in the wine trade, it's so uncool to say that you don't like Gamay. If you were like, I hate Gamay,
you'd be like, what is wrong with you?
I hate Gamay is as uncool as saying, I love Sauvignon Blanc. Or
it's the opposite. I know where you're going with this.
Or
that I love Gewurztraminer.
Or love and Gewurztraminer. They kind of all go in the same category. If you were like, I love Gewurztraminer, I hate Gamay, it'd be like, who is that girl?
Fighting words.
Yeah. Go back to being a wallflower, please. We don't want to hear any of that.
I do have to say, I guess it is, I mean, it is when you taste it, a kind of grape that, like, if you like red wines, even if you don't love red wines, it's hard not to love this grape. It has sort of a drinkability. It's easy to share because everyone will like it a little bit.
It's so like energy, like this saltiness, almost like this freshness. This one in particular, it's really.
I mean, they're both delicious, actually.
Maybe there's a pleasure element to this wine that I really enjoy because it's got this sort of more supple.
But it's the texture of it too, I think, that adds to it.
But I like the tension and the bite on this wine.
Me too. This is I would smash this bottle by myself.
Yeah, and I think that's where we're also seeing the different terroirs and we're seeing like the structure from the one. And I think it'd be amazing to produce wine in Morgon.
So this is a perfect
Morgon.
Actually for the
Morgon.
Cornichon. Oh my god, we're gonna like maybe have to
Cornichon. Morgon Cornichon.
If anyone wants to make a Cornichon / Morgon wrap for us,
feel or free. A haiku, we're open to it. It's quite good. Yeah. You've already got like two lines done for you, you just need one more.
Just add it. Yeah. Send it to us. We want to see the videos. Maybe we'll like splice it into the end of one of these YouTube videos.
Train of Mogul with a Cornichon. Hop on.
All right, Eminem. So, you can find us. We want to hear all of your favorite Gamays. Where have you drank them? What did you have with them?
Beaujolais, also really interesting to hear what you think of Gamay. Right. And where have you had it? What do you think people that, like, have you heard of it? Like, what have you heard of? What are you
exactly doing? We want to hear it all. You can find us at juice.show online, where you can also buy a tote bag. You can find us on Instagram
At
juice.podcast.
Yeah, thank you. And also on Twitter juice_podcast. So we're available on all channels. Thank you for tuning in. Obviously, if you're tuning in for the first time, thank you for tuning in. But please subscribe. We would love you to stay with us along the journey.
Absolutely. You can find us everywhere where you listen to your podcasts. Yeah. So cheers until next time.